Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
Let us love not with words or speech, but with actions and in truth.
President Barack Obama turned to the Bible to describe what is needed to heal racial divisions in the United States. He read from John's Gospel at the memorial service Tuesday for five police officers killed in Dallas. But closing racial divisions is a challenge. Many in America turn to places of worship for moral guidance. But Lifeway Research reported last year that 86% of Protestant pastors say their congregations are mostly either black or white, leaving little chance for members of different races to talk with each other. It isn't much different than 1963, when civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. called 11 a.m. Sunday church services the most segregated hour in this nation.
It has been a rough few weeks in America. On July 7th, a black gunman shot and killed five police officers in Dallas, Texas. The gunman told police he was targeting white officers. The shooting came the same week two African-American men were shot and killed by white police officers in separate incidents in Louisiana and Minnesota. The shootings left some people questioning the state of race relations in the United States. Instead of pointing fingers, we need to figure out why so many police feel so stressed doing their job and why so many African Americans feel targeted by the police, said Kurt Harlow, minister at the Bayside Church in Sacramento, California. He said his church has black and white members offering a chance for honest discussion.
Purcell Duckett is minister of the Ross Road Church in Memphis, Tennessee, which also has both black and white members. We just had people from Black Lives Matter demonstrate. I call it creating a little bit of civil disobedience, Duckett said. And many people wonder why they are doing that. If more whites went to church with blacks, they would hear parents express fear their children could be killed by police for a minor car violation, Duckett said.
Pastor Susan Newman Moore of All Souls Church in Washington, D.C., knows some people are troubled with the name Black Lives Matter. The criticism from some is that the name should be All Lives Matter, she said. What Newman Moore tells her diverse church is that the Black Lives Matter movement is very much like a parent with children. You love all your children, but if one child gets very sick and has to go to the intensive care unit of the hospital, you're going to put all your attention on that sick child until he or she is better. Right now in America, black lives are in intensive care, Newman Moore said.
Tracy Blackman is senior minister at Christ the King United Church of Christ in Florissant, Missouri. Integration, diversity is a good thing, she told Voice of America, but churches, regardless of whether they are all or mostly black or all or mostly white, have a role to play because of their moral and religious standing. It isn't just Christians, but this mandate of caring for those who are facing difficulty is found in the Quran and the Talmud, Blackman said. Those are the books that provide the teachings of the Muslim and Jewish religions.
Some churches are trying to help their mostly black or mostly white congregations get to hear from members of other races. In Hill County, Georgia, members of the mostly white Airline Baptist Church plan to travel to the mostly black St. John Baptist Church for Sunday services. The ministers of the two churches do not plan to talk about what is on their minds regarding recent events. I think that way too often we don't listen to one another, said Scott Moore, minister of Airline Baptist. I've been guilty of that myself, not listening to other people's opinions and thinking only about what I'm going to say.
Former U.S. President Jimmy Carter has helped organize the New Baptist Covenant to bring mostly black and white Baptist churches together. In Dallas, Texas, George Mason, minister of a mostly white Baptist church, and Frederick Haynes, leader of a mostly black Baptist church, joined Carter's covenant. They wrote about the Dallas shootings in the Dallas Morning News. The only way that all lives matter is for each life to matter, black or white, and in this tragic case, blue, Mason and Haynes wrote. Blue is the color often given to police.
Ed Stetzer chairs the Billy Graham Center for Evangelism at Wheaton College. Stetzer said, "It makes sense that when blacks and whites sit down together to pray, it will help." Stetzer said, "Many ministers recognize that they need to increase diversity. But there is nothing wrong," he said, "with U.S. immigrants from Vietnam, Korea, or China wanting to worship together with fellow immigrants." I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Bruce Alpert.
American officials are increasing security for the upcoming Republican and Democratic political conventions. This comes after five police officers were shot and killed in Dallas. FBI Director James Comey recently spoke at a congressional hearing about the possibility of domestic terrorism. He said, "Anytime there's a national spotlight on a political event in the United States, there's a risk that groups that aspire to engage in acts of domestic terrorism will be attracted." Jed Johnson is head of the Department of Homeland Security. He told lawmakers he is concerned about the possibility of violence. And he is concerned about demonstrations at the conventions getting out of hand. Johnson said he will travel to Cleveland and Philadelphia to personally inspect the security at both conventions. About 50,000 people are expected at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio, from July 18th to July 21st. Donald Trump is likely to be named the party's presidential candidate. A week later, from July 25th to July 28th, about the same number of Democrats will meet in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. They will gather to formally name Hillary Clinton as the Democratic presidential candidate. In Cleveland, security concerns are complicated by the fact Ohio is a so-called open carry state. That means that anyone with a legal permit to carry a gun can do so openly. "We're going to make sure we stay vigilant," said Cleveland Police Chief Calvin Williams. "But we also want to make sure that we ask the community to remain vigilant." Williams said he will uphold the law in the state, but he would prefer that people not openly carry guns during the convention. He said the city is prepared for the event. The U.S. Secret Service banned guns inside the main convention site and in the security area around it. But people with firearms will be able to carry them in areas that surround the convention site as long as they are holstered. Cleveland officials have been concerned about the possibility of violent clashes between people who support Trump and his opponents. In the protest areas, guns will be permitted. But common items like glass bottles, large backpacks, mace, and canned goods will be banned from the event area. Philadelphia Police Commissioner Richard Ross said that the Dallas shooting had required that we do things different tactically. But he did not say what those plans would be. Philadelphia is handling protesters differently than Cleveland. The city will permit supporters of Clinton's opponent, Bernie Sanders, to gather in a park across from the convention building. There is also a new border, 1.5 meters high, to protect the convention at the Wells Fargo Center. A spokeswoman for the Philadelphia mayor told VOA that city officials expect demonstrations outside the center to be peaceful. "We feel confident that we're prepared for demonstrations and any public safety threats," she said. However, there is another issue that could create problems for people in Philadelphia. The city's airport workers have voted to go on strike during the convention. Dan Bulla is president of the Treadstone Group, a private security firm in Charlotte, North Carolina. He told VOA that law enforcement officials are preparing for physical acts of civil disobedience, like blocking streets. But they are also preparing for extraordinary crimes, such as terror and cyber attacks. Bulla has been involved in helping with security planning for the conventions.
A telephone helpline is aiding public health officials in Pakistan to predict dengue fever outbreaks. Dengue is a disease carried by mosquitoes. It affects people who live in hot and humid climates of the world, according to the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Dengue causes sudden high fever, headaches, and severe joint and muscle pain. There is no cure or vaccine for dengue fever. An estimated 400,000 people are infected with dengue each year. Worldwide, an estimated 2.5 billion people are at risk of getting the disease. Pakistan is making some progress in controlling dengue. Researchers have created a computer process that uses helpline reports from the public. The information is used to help forecast the number of cases. Public health officials then take measures to limit the effects of dengue on a community. For example, public health workers can get rid of high populations of mosquitoes. Lakshmi Subramanian is a teacher of mathematical sciences at New York University. He said the computer process is accurate. He said the computer is actually giving you the exact range, and that is more powerful than, oh, I think an outbreak is going to happen, or an outbreak is not going to happen. He added that an outbreak can be traced to neighborhoods and blocks where they started. The helpline has been in operation for about 5 years. The Pakistani province of Punjab was hit by a severe outbreak of dengue in 2011. More than 21,000 people were infected, and 350 people died. Hospitals in Punjab were unprepared and crowded with patients. Since then, researchers in the United States and Pakistan developed the helpline. Almost 300,000 people have called the service with questions about the symptoms of dengue. They also report areas where mosquitoes are living. Experts say the system is not costly. They say that in 2013, the number of dengue cases in the city of Lahore fell to 1,600 using information from the helpline and disease prevention efforts. I'm Ana Mateo.
Mali has produced many world-famous artists and musicians. An art school in the country's capital, Bamako, is trying to use that rich cultural history to fight youth unemployment and to deter migration. Abdoulaye Konate is a famous Malian artist. In 2004, he founded the Belafaseke Koyate Conservatory. Konate said he wanted to offer students the chance to get a higher education without leaving Mali. To deter migration, one strategy the school has been using is to bring the world to the students. In addition to the school's 80 teachers, instructors from other countries regularly give classes at the school. Cuban teachers, for example, trained Jonathan Dembele in classical guitar. Dembele graduated from the school last year. He had returned to Mali after studying abroad in Denmark and Finland. This training made him a versatile musician, but he still prefers to play folk music. Some graduates find jobs at media agencies or as teachers. Others have set up businesses. The school did a study last year and found that 60% of its graduates have found work. Dembélé, the guitar player, plays music at weddings and other events. He plays regularly at a hotel, too. Dembélé said,
"Because it's not easy, I repeat it, it's not easy to live off the music here in Mali. Unless you have some branches somewhere else, not in Mali. Because in Mali, musicians are really not well paid. You work to survive."
Earlier this year, the conservatory hosted the Bamako Acoustic Festival. It was the first international music festival to take place in Bamako since 2012. In that year, conflict broke out in Mali. The country is still trying to recover. Konate, the founder of the school, says the arts are a key weapon for peace. A new generation, he adds, that works in media and culture can help transform the country, reconcile people, and build the economy. I'm John Russell.
There is big news about the environment. Scientists say a hole in Earth's protective ozone layer is starting to heal. A new study confirms the hole is getting smaller. A report on the study was published late last month in the journal Science. The scientists say the reason for the improvement is a reduction in the release of man-made chemicals into Earth's atmosphere. These chemicals are called chlorofluorocarbons, or CFCs for short. "It's a big surprise," said Susan Solomon, the lead writer of the report. "I didn't think it would be this early," she said. Solomon is an atmospheric chemist and works at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
Ozone is a form of oxygen gas. It is found in the air we breathe and in the upper atmosphere. Near Earth, ozone in the air is a danger to life. It is a pollutant. But the ozone layer, 10 to 50 kilometers up in the atmosphere, protects life on Earth. It helps to block dangerous ultraviolet UV waves from the sun. It stops them from reaching the planet's surface. Researchers first discovered the hole in the ozone layer over Antarctica more than 30 years ago. The new report credits the shrinking ozone hole to a worldwide ban on chlorofluorocarbons. CFCs once were commonly used in many products, including aerosols, cleaning substances, refrigerators, and plastics. Scientists found that when released into the air, the chemicals damage the ozone layer, creating the hole. CFCs were banned when world leaders signed an agreement called the Montreal Protocol in 1987.
Susan Solomon compared the ozone hole to a patient that needs healing. "It isn't just that the patient is in remission," Solomon said. he's actually starting to get better. The patient got very sick in the 80s when we were pumping all that chlorine into the atmosphere. Measurements taken in September showed the ozone hole has shrunk since the year 2000. The new numbers show that the hole is smaller by 4.5 million square kilometers. That is about half the area of the U.S. mainland. One year was different, however. In 2015, the ozone hole got bigger, not smaller. After looking at scientific records, Solomon said that increase resulted from a natural event. She said it was caused by the eruption of the Calbuco volcano in Chile.
While the healing is coming earlier than many scientists expected, it is an ongoing, continuing process. The ozone hole will not be completely closed for at least another 30 years. Estimates are it will close by around 2050. We can now be confident that the things we've done have put the planet on a path to heal, Solomon said. There is a sense of mission accomplished, said Mario Molina in an email to VOA. Molina works at the University of California, San Diego. He shared the 1995 Nobel Prize for Chemistry for his research on the ozone issue. He praised this latest study, but was not involved in it.
However, there is other news about Antarctica that is not as good. For the first time in 4 million years, Antarctica registered carbon dioxide, or CO2, levels above 400 parts per million. That information comes from U.S. scientists at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. The far southern hemisphere was the last place on Earth where CO2 had not yet reached this mark of 400 parts per million, said Peter Tonz. He is the lead scientist of NOAA's Global Greenhouse Gas Reference Network. Global CO2 levels will not return to values below 400 ppm in our lifetimes, and almost certainly for much longer, he said. Scientists say too much CO2 causes temperatures on Earth to rise.
CO2 levels usually go up in colder months. In the warmer months, plants in the northern hemisphere use some of it, and that lowers the levels. But NOAA notes that plants are not enough to stop the rise of CO2 levels. Those levels have risen every year since 1958, when measurements began. Tonz said that evidence shows that the CO2 increase is caused entirely by human activities. These activities include burning oil and other fossil fuels for energy. Because the burning of fossil fuel has been at a record high during the last several years, Tonz said, the rate of CO2 increase has also been at a record high. He said some of the gas will stay in the atmosphere for thousands of years. I'm Ann Ball.
And I'm Brian Lynn.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.